Welcome to the Heat, Cinema Geekly's fortnightly wrestling podcast. It's Anthony and Jacqueline, and we're back to talk more of the happenings in the world of pro wrestling. And for me, that is almost entirely AEW based. Yes. And I've only really watched like 1.5 AEW shows. I watched All Out, and then I watched the Dynamite after All Out, and only partially so.
Okay.
But I am up to date on what's happened. I followed the things that have happened since. I just didn't see the show. So I don't have a lot in the way of personal reviews outside of All Out. Did you watch the pre-show? There were 4 matches on this pre-show, and I did not see any of them.
Watch the pre-show.
Okay.
No. Even though I can't go back and watch it anytime, I just have not.
No. So. Tons of multi-person matches again.
Yeah.
So there is that. Just weird teams, but then also matches with normal teams. And yeah. So we didn't watch any of those. No opinions on them. And that leads us right in to the main card, which started with MJF and Daniel Garcia, which saw MJF winning. And I know this was controversial, I think.
I was going to say, I had some feelings about it.
Okay. Because I feel like the BTS reasons for why it happened. Because after the match, even though MJF won, Daniel Garcia, because they did this bit where MJF was like, we can put our differences aside now. We had our argument, quote unquote, where he tried to kill Daniel Garcia. And now we've had a match and the better man won. So I'm willing to shake your hand. And the crowd was begging Daniel Garcia to like turn on MJF. And by turn on him, they just mean like give him what he had coming to him, which he did. Yeah. And he gave him like a pile driver off of the middle rope, and they like stretchered MJF out. So apparently the BTS reasons on this are, I think Daniel Garcia maybe would have won under other circumstances, but he has yet to resign to AEW, and MJF is, I think, doing an acting thing. So they wanted to take him off of, they wanted a reason for him to be off of TV.
For a little while.
Yeah. I feel like if Daniel Garcia had already signed, he probably would have just won. And they would have done the injury angle thingy at the finish of the match or something. But because he hasn't made a decision yet on where he's going to land, although it feels like he's probably going to re-sign with AEW, but I think that was the behind-the-scenes reason why they went with that finish.
Kind of makes sense.
Yeah, and it kind of works for MJF, maybe needing like a win after losing the title.
Losing to Ospreay.
I could see it.
I will say, too, I knew the results before I watched this match, and Excalibur kind of sold it for me a little bit when he was talking about how Daniel Garcia was so, like, blinded by his rage or whatever, that, like, he wasn't thinking straight. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm like, I can get behind that storytelling.
Yeah,
good foreshadowing. Yeah, so I was like, okay. I'm like, I got it. I'm with you now. So like, it brought me back around. Even though I wish Daniel Garcia won, but I have a theory about where he'll end up within AEW, which we get to later in the show.
Ooh, okay. So next we had Young Bucks retaining the titles over BCC, Claudio and Yuta. It was a fine match.
Yeah.
But this just sort of seems to be where the Young Bucks are these days. And I wonder how much of it is they're just older and their bodies are slowing down on them versus they're just leaning into, they're a different kind of heel right now. Before when they were heels, they were basically heels, but doing like their babyface matches where they were doing all the flashy stuff and cool combos. And they've really toned down on that. And to me, it feels like it has significantly dipped the match quality. Like when I see a Young Bucks match now, I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, but and I will say too, like, because even Wheeler Yuta and Claudio are great wrestlers too. And I just think too, though, this whole card comparatively was stacked.
Yes.
And so, like, I think on another show, this would have been a better match. You know what I mean? If they did the same exact things, I just think everything else kind of led to its, you know,
and I feel like part of this just felt reheated as well, like BCC versus the Elite. We've seen this we've seen various combinations of this a lot, and the tag team division is probably the one that is in most disrepair right now. And like, they've lost the Lucha Brothers. It sounds like in the bidding war for Motor City Machine Guns, they've lost there as well. It sounds like they're going to NXT.
And I think, honestly, what I think they need is a young team. And so I think, like, my hope, and this has been my hope now for a long time, but I really want, like, Top Flight to win.
Okay.
Like, to take the belts off the Young Bucks. I feel like it'll just be a different energy, you know, like some, like a different team who hasn't had it before, someone who's maybe a little bit newer, who's just like, this is going to be their first big thing. You know, some, I just, that team I just go to because I feel like they're, they've done so much. And, you know, now that they're both back and healthy, it, it seems like the right time to launch them forward.
Yeah, like, this is a growing discourse I'm seeing on the internet as well among the fandom. Like, not just them, but also talking about maybe Private Party or something like that. And some people forgetting their history, because a lot of them seem to think that AEW just sort of, like, they started out hot, but then AEW just sort of pushed them to the side. And I'm like, not really. Like, both of those teams have suffered a lot of injuries. There was a long period of time where Dante Martin was a singles wrestler and Isaiah Cassidy was a singles. Like, for just long stretches of time. And then, like, Dante came back and but Darius came back and Dante got hurt.
So
it's been, there's been a lot of ups and downs, but I I feel like maybe they're in the process of sort of building that up. It sounds like it sounds like the Outrunners are also kind of gaining momentum with
I don't
the
know
fans.
Why they are so popular, but I really hope it doesn't. I don't want them to be the tight, like, the champions.
That's not working for you.
I mean, it does, but like,
but they're like, they're more of like a fun, like, they wouldn't be a serious act to put at the top.
Well, but also too, like, their style of wrestling, like, I feel like they're FTR 2.0. You know what I mean? Like, it's the same style of wrestling to me. I was, for me personally, I think the most fun tag team champions in, like, the recent past was Ricky Starks and Big Bill. Like, they were fun tag champions to me. Like, I want that again.
Yeah. They were a fun team. I mean, Swerve and Keith Lee was, like, a really fun team.
I forgot that they held the titles. Man, where's Keith Lee? Has been sick. I hope he's okay.
Yeah, me too.
I wish he would come back. Anyway,
same.
Sorry.
Big same.
This is how much we enjoyed this match.
I know. We're talking about other stuff. Well, next was a match I really loved. Ospreay retaining his international championship against Pac. I think everybody knew. Well, not just like you and I. We knew this was going to be a great match. But this crowd was doing standing ovations before they locked up. They were amped and super, like, even I was taken aback by how hyped this crowd was. Like, I think everybody knew it was going to be good, but I didn't realize there was that level of anticipation in the crowd. Well, they had a really great match that built, I don't want to say, it didn't build slowly, but they kind of had like a moderate build towards the end, but then it was really good throughout, but near the end it really just started picking up and they were doing crazy
everything,
crazy bumps, like Will Ospreay was like landing on his neck a bunch of times. There was that there was that great avalanche Poison Rana where Will lands on his feet so smoothly. And hit him with a hidden blade that was really great, and the crowd was just going bonkers for everything.
This was a
great match.
And what, and again, I go to the commentators. They were talking about how, like, I guess Pac, like, paved the way for, like, someone like Will Ospreay. And I was just like, I'm like, well, I don't know these things. I'm like, so I'm sitting there, I'm like, huh, like, that's, you know, so amazing.
Honestly,
so it's almost like a student teacher type match.
Yeah.
You know, watching.
So, like, sidebar, fun fact. So there is a promo. I think Ospreay did like a promo on Collision prior to All Out, where he's cutting a promo on Pac. And he's talking about like how all the fans know him as, you know, like this great high flyer, this wrestler who traveled the world. He's like, But the like the first thing I think of is the guy I saw backyard wrestling in the UK, which like
that's crazy.
That was such a huge thing in the early 2000s. Double fun fact, because I was such a wrestling nerd, of course, like I was doing like backyard wrestling with all of my friends.
Of course.
And there were kids wouldn't know what these are now, but forums, message boards. There was a really popular backyard wrestling message board that all of the backyard wrestling kids hung out on the internet. And I remember seeing Pac. In fact, I may still have somewhere on a dusty external hard drive somewhere, some clips of Pac wrestling in the backyard, like doing a Phoenix Splash off of a bench in a gym somewhere. With just onto like mats on the floor. And by the way, he was going by that name then as well.
Pac?
That's been his name since backyard wrestling. And in this promo, Will Ospreay started talking about other UK backyard wrestlers that like, I knew their names. Like he was talking about, but they're like people who either aren't big in wrestling. Like maybe they indie wrestled for a while or something, but they're not big names. And I'm like, oh my God, I know. Like, I can't imagine what those people are thinking, like hearing their names being said on like, wow, he's doing like deep cuts. There's going to be like maybe 75 people in the world who's going to hear that stuff and be like, I know who he's talking about. That was crazy.
He's playing it for the hometown crowd.
But yeah, I mean, cause like Will was a backyard wrestler too. And like, he sort of, like when Pac was backyard wrestling, he was doing stuff that like nobody else had ever seen anybody do like in backyard wrestling. Cause very few people were actually athletes. Most of them were just kids. But he was like an insane athlete even from like
from then.
And he was just doing the craziest things. And everyone was like, he's going to be a big star one day. And he did. And, you know, Ospreay followed in his footsteps. He did the same thing and honestly went to all the places Pac went except for WWE. So this was my favorite match on the show. But my second favorite match on the show happened right after it.
Yes. And mine are flipped.
Okay, I mean, and that's fair. That's fair. Even, I should note, I think even Dave Meltzer, who is famously hard on women's matches, I think gave this like 4 3/4 out of 5.
You cannot like deny how great Chris Statlander versus Willow Nightingale was.
No, in a Chicago street fight. And they had the like, this is what makes it all the more impressive, because they had the hardest job on the show, which was to follow an insanely good match where the crowd was on fire the whole time. And they went out there and tore the house down. It was crazy and violent. There were some things in there that made me cringe way more than stuff in the Pac and Ospreay match. Like when Statlander did that swanton to the outside and her feet just kicked Willow in the back of the head, even though she was trying to get out of the way.
Yep. That was crazy.
They did
the fluorescent light bulbs made me cringe.
I was stunned.
Holy shit.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
That was bonkers. They did like a spear off of the stage through tables. There was tacks. Chris Statlander went to do an axe
doing
kick.
The splits.
And Willow moved, so she just did the splits into thumbtacks. And crazy. Like a bunch of women wrestling fans on Twitter, like almost simultaneously, were all like, that's what cramps feel like.
Pretty much.
It looked so painful. They just were incredible. Statlander won after choking out Willow with like a chain assist on a submission. And
yeah, she like had it wrapped around her mouth and everything. It was nuts.
Yeah, it was crazy. Stokely was out there wearing a t-shirt with like 1590s rappers' names on it. It was like Belly, like the, I think it was like artist. It may have actually been the Belly soundtrack. May have been like just the artist or whatever. Maybe that was a shirt from that album release. But crazy match.
It was a crazy match. This was, and I think whenever the women in AEW have a street fight or a lights out match or whatever, they go so hard.
Always deliver.
So hard. And it does not matter who is in it. And I feel like the women just, in a way, outperform the men in that way because, mm-hmm. like, they just go, like, balls to the wall yeah. crazy. And it's awesome to watch. 100%. And I wasn't sure how this was going to turn out because the last time they were in a street fight together, they were teamed up and Willow and Anna Jay wound up going through the table and then mm-hmm. Anna Jay like broke her tailbone or whatever. But I was like, but then I saw some of this stuff. And I was like, oh my God, this is absolutely insane. So
yeah.
Love these ladies.
Craziness.
I feel like they're probably best friends, right?
I think they definitely like, they're probably, are. Yeah.
They're probably roommates on the road.
Okay, so then we had Okada retaining the Continental title over Mark Briscoe, Orange Cassidy, and Konosuke Takeshita.
Yes.
This is where the crowd kind of died a little bit. They wanted to be into this mm-hmm. match, but they were exhausted from the other two mm-hmm. matches. And that led to a spot that I think maybe would have been fun if the crowd was hot, but instead okay. seemed really, like, just flat. Prolonged and flat, which was the... Everyone hits a suplex and then Orange Cassidy tries and he gets suplexed. Everyone hits a suplex again and then he tries to hit one and gets suplexed again. And they did this like three times and the crowd was flat. And
yeah,
they had to move on from this. Eventually he did hit it. The one thing the crowd was awake for, though, was any time they teased Takeshita and Okada, which, yes, I think that would be an incredible match. And I think that they are yep. leaning in that direction.
I agree.
Honestly, I would have been okay if Takeshita had won the title, but not by pinning Okada. Like if he had yeah. pinned
Briscoe
or OC probably. Or something. Yeah, yeah. Just I would have been okay with it, but I understand. Like maybe they're gonna build instead
yeah.
to like a straight singles match between the two of them, where he just challenges yeah. for the title. But I mean, I liked it. It was, yeah. it didn't quite reach like really good status to me just cause like the crowd was kind of flat.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I liked when it finally picked up and got kind of chaotic
mm-hmm.
cause that's what I enjoy.
Oh yeah.
And so I did enjoy that. The one thing I will say, cause I go back to, I don't know whether it was the last episode or before that you were talking about, announcers and yeah. how you like, you know how other, you know, today's whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I just want to say, I think Don Callis is one of the best announcers.
He's really good.
And I would put him on there permanently if I were anybody.
Yeah.
He's trying to do that because he builds people up in such a heel way like that. Mm-hmm. He's very good at it. I give him a lot of credit. The way I don't know if it's scripted or whatever it is, but he does it very well.
No, that's just, he's just been doing this for a long time and he's just really good at it. He
knows what to say.
Yeah. He just knows the things to say. So Mercedes Moné defeats Hikaru Shida to retain the TBS championship. To me, this mm-hmm. feels like 0-2 for Mercedes on pay-per-views, recent pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. The Brit match was not good. I didn't think this match was very good either. And I don't mm-hmm. know what was happening here. They did have another match that was good on TV.
Yeah.
But this match was not that at all. And the one thing I kept seeing, and I don't know if Mercedes was, I don't know if she got hurt or if she got her bell rung a little bit or if she was just distracted.
Mm.
But I did see her go to like her hairline like a bunch because like
yeah.
everything she's wearing is like a wig, but I don't know if it was becoming like unstitched or like what was happening, but she went like up there so many times it actually reminded me of another match that didn't do so hot that everyone thought would be kind of good. There's this WrestleMania match between Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero for I think it was maybe like WrestleMania 21, I want to say, and Mysterio got this new kind of mask that in the olden days, masks would, you put your mask on and then they would lace up in the back, and he got this new mask that was covered in the back, but has like a chin strap underneath or whatever, which I think he still uses some sort of variation of that now. Yes. But for whatever reason, there was something wonky with that mask, and like every two things in the match, he would let you'd see him adjust. And gotcha. The match just didn't quite take off. And like there was weird stuff in here. Like Shida went to do like her katana knee strike thingy and mm-hmm. like kind of hit the first one, but Mercedes didn't go anywhere, and like clobbered right. her with the second one, but Mercedes didn't fall down, and then went to do a third one and completely missed, and then Mercedes right. fell down and then just got out of the ring.
Yes. So there had to have been something else yeah. going on.
Even with her winning, it looked to me, maybe I was reading too much into it, but even with her winning after the match was over, it didn't look like she was very happy. Like she knew
Mercedes or Shida?
Mercedes. Like gotcha. When the winner doesn't look happy, to me that always feels like they know it wasn't something. Good or something went wrong or
yeah.
something. Yeah. It just didn't look super hot.
Right.
What were your thoughts?
No, I agree. I still do think it was better than the one with Britt though.
Okay, so, maybe I need to watch them back to back. I don't know. To me, they felt sort of like equally on the same level, but like different things yeah. went wrong in those matches.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know what it is because, well, I don't know. Maybe there's something because the first Mercedes pay-per-view match was with Willow, and that was really good.
Oh yeah, that was.
And the match she had with Stephanie Vaquer was also pretty good.
Yes, that was good.
So the last two just haven't been. I don't know what the deal is, but Mercedes has been in both of those matches. So I don't know if we can necessarily pin it on her opponents in those matches. And,
right.
And Shida is very good in the ring, so I don't know.
Yeah.
It was weird. Speaking of weird, although this worked out, this ended up being good. Bryan Danielson yeah. defeating Jack Perry to retain the AEW championship. They almost went 30 minutes. I don't think anybody yes. thought Jack Perry was going to win.
No.
They still had a good match because, of course,
yes.
they were going to have a good match. But the real story of the match was what happened after the match.
Heck yeah.
So we had Christian coming down with his casino gauntlet contract from All In.
First, though, Killswitch was in the ring.
And him and Jack yeah.
stared at each other for a moment.
Oh, that's
in that,
right.
Like, knowing-ish way. Yeah, because mm-hmm. it was one of those things where it's like,
could we be friends again? We're both heels
yeah.
now.
Yeah, pretty much. You want them to just, like...
Mm-hmm.
Like Killswitch, leave Christian, even go to the Elite. Oh man, could you imagine Killswitch in the Elite? Anyway, right? I digress.
So then Moxley shows up, which immediately felt weird to me because Moxley's character has been, I think we talked yes. about it on the last podcast, has been just weird. Like
yes.
very bizarre. Like he felt like they reset his character completely, but it all kind of started making sense here and afterwards. The rest of the BCC showed up as well to like worry or scare off Christian and the patriarchy. And then they go yep. into the ring to settle and, you know, it's to celebrate with Brian. And the weird thing is people were celebrating at first, but then people got the vibe of like something feels off and you could yes. tell the crowd was picking up a vibe because they started getting really hushed. And then yeah. Claudio gives him this uppercut and the crowd gasped. Like everyone yeah. gasped.
like what the hell?
Like they felt like something was going to happen. But when it happened, they still couldn't believe it.
Right.
And
you didn't think it was going to be Claudio to do it, I think.
Yeah. And Moxley put a plastic bag over Brian's head and tried to murder him. And
yes. My favorite part of this whole thing, though, is that like it looks like Pac is gonna go hug
Yuta,
and yeah. then just holds him back, like
yeah.
so that he can't do it.
No, because it's like
clearly no one talked to Wheeler about what was
because it's like it's like they know Yuta would be the one who would like of all the people in
break
the group, Yuta would be the one to disagree with it, and
yeah.
they're like, you got to hold him back. Not like yeah. we're gonna turn on him, but like you got to hold him back.
Yeah, he like, can't help.
He's not going to want to be a part of this, but it's for his own good. It's going to be for everyone's own good or whatever. And ultimately, I think the reasoning behind it is like Brian got soft, and like they had this idea about the BCC was supposed to be this thing. And now Brian's talking about like leaving wrestling and all of this. So, this is the stuff that has angered Moxley, and it's not the same group. Yeah.
Well, to me, what's really funny is Brian Danielson is the one who had to convince John Moxley to start the BCC.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, ironic. People sort of forget that these guys are less like best friends and more like frenemies. Like, they were forced to meld together by William Regal, who literally came out after, like, that was his debut, was like after they had a match where they tried to rip each other apart. And he's like, you guys would be better together than you are fighting each other.
Right. But so I do remember still that original promo that from Brian Danielson when he talked to John Moxley about it and talked about bringing up newer talent. He named Wheeler Yuta, Daniel Garcia, and Lee Moriarty. Mm-hmm. Well, now Wheeler Yuta is going to be floating in between for a little bit. But I honestly think that Brian Danielson and Daniel Garcia starts following Danielson around for a little bit.
It's possible.
And that was my prediction from before. Cause I'm like, they make so much sense together and they've had great matches. And so I'm like, maybe that will be a thing.
Yeah. I feel like that works. Main event was Hangman Adam Page defeating Swerve in a lights out cage match, which some people thought went too far on the violence scale. I didn't actually think that at all. Actually, I thought it was, I thought it was less violent than their Texas Death Match that they had.
It was less bloody.
Yeah, it was definitely less bloody.
They did some crazy spots though.
I know there definitely was some stuff. There are a couple of things that hindered it for me. One, this has just been a hindrance of mine for years. I know that these cages are safer for the wrestlers, but they're terrible to watch matches through. Yeah. Like, unless you've got a camera in the ring, like seeing stuff through the mesh is like really difficult. And it can be tough to figure out what's happening sometimes. In the olden days when I was a kid, the cages used to be like metal bars almost.
Oh, God.
Which were horrible for the wrestlers to hit. But you could see through them very clearly. It was very easy to see what was happening in them. But that was a thing. Also, it felt like it took a really long time for it to pick up. And this was like an over 30 minute match.
And it was a long match.
It was like 31, I think. And it took a while. They did some stuff that, you know, they just kind of did like typical cage stuff for a little bit. Then they brought out the cinder block, which Swerve has used before. But usually not to the degree that it was used here.
It was crazy.
Yeah, like giving Hangman a... there's a million names for it, but I'll just go with the Vertebreaker name, giving Hangman Page one of these onto the cinder block. Normally that's like a neck and shoulders landing, but you don't want to do that on a cinder block. So he just opted for his lower back landing on it, which seemed to just carve it up really bad.
Yes.
He powerbombed Swerve onto this thing and his back contorted in a way that was very hard to watch. It was not one of those like fake ones that they use to like smash people with and it breaks everywhere. This is just a real one and they just landed on it.
Yes.
Hard to watch. Probably outside of those, would you say the ending is probably the other like real shocking thing?
100%.
In the match? 100%. So,
yes.
This is, and it's ironic. I guess it's not because I understand like that people are squeamish about it. But if you put the squeamishness aside or like the fear of the thing that I'm about to talk about aside, if you think about it logically, it's way, way, way less dangerous than getting powerbombed on a cinder block.
Heck yes.
But yes, people have a fear of needles. And yes, Hangman Page took out a hypodermic needle, which I presume had nothing in it. It was just a needle. And he took out, like, Swerve's grill and literally put a needle, like, inside of his mouth, like, through his cheek. Even though you couldn't really see it coming out on the other side, because needles are very small. And I get...
Do you think Britt Baker taught him how to do this?
Maybe. Like, they did opt for that, and they did go from the inside out, like it was like doing Novocaine or something. Like, I don't have a fear of needles, but
I don't have a fear of needles, but I hate the dentist, so.
Oh, see, yeah, me too. But, like, getting, like, blood drawn or something, like, that's no big deal at all.
Yeah.
So, like, and Swerve didn't feel a thing because it's a tiny, tiny little needle, but there are people who have fears of it. So I'm sure to them this was terrifying.
Yes.
To have somebody, like, just stick a needle in your mouth like that. And then, of course, the end of the match was him hitting him on the top of the head with a chair that broke away. And the referee stopped the match on a KO. I get people being upset about the chair. But the chair was that was a very clearly gimmick prop. And it was a prop chair. Like,
oh, well, that
I've heard a lot of loud chair shots in my time, but that one was so loud it didn't even sound like a chair.
Right.
It was either heavily shaved down or made out of something else, but like the seat popped right off on impact, but it sounded incredible and the crowd went crazy and they played it up like a knockout finish. Yeah. And Hangman won, and weirdly enough, I saw some people comparing this to my favorite video game of all time.
Oh.
The Last of Us Part 2, which is a story about how revenge doesn't actually get you any... Like, people will go through anything to get revenge, but it doesn't really get you anything in the end, and you start questioning what's happened to you. And
like, you don't feel any better.
I kind of got those vibes after this match from Paige. I thought it was a great performance from him because he goes up, like, after he hits Swerve and the match is over, like, he stands there kind of in shock.
Right.
Like, he doesn't even, like, what just happened. And then when he's going up the ramp, like, he sees all the people, like, tending to Swerve or whatever. And I swear to you, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I feel like this is what they're going for. I feel like he maybe took like a step or a step and a half back towards the ring, not to like fight him, but like maybe out of remorse or regret, like, okay, maybe we took things too far or something.
See, I didn't get that. I thought he was going back to take more shots.
But he didn't. He stopped. And then he went back to the top of the stage, which is why I feel like it was a remorse or regret thing. Because, like, if he wanted to attack him, he would have just gone and done it. But then he's, like, there sort of, like, in shock for a minute. And then he just starts, like, screaming like a wild man. and, like, that's how the show goes off the air. I mean, I feel like maybe that's the direction they're going in. But, like, on the other hand, the storyline leading up to this... Like, part of it is also, I think, why this didn't end up being... I thought it was for sure going to be my favorite match on the show, but why it ended up being, like, third or something instead of, like, first or even second, is the storyline set up for this was so over the top that, like...
It really was.
I mean, the final build-up to this was, like, this video where Swerve bought his old childhood home and was like, you know, so happy to have it back in his family. And then later that night, Hangman Page is there and literally burns it to the ground. In like a really well done, like,
production.
But number one, that's aside from the fact that that is not my kind of wrestling storytelling. Like, this is not the sort of thing I go for because it's just way too over the top. But also in my mind, it's like, what can you do in any wrestling match that could meet what's already happened?
Right.
Like, he did take out
a piece of the burned wood.
Yeah. Yeah.
And tried to stab Swerve in the eye with it.
Which the crowd went nuts for.
Right.
Because I think they thought it was a knife or something.
Which
would have met the criteria for what's crazier than that. Like burning down a house. Like, oh, he tries to stab him with a knife.
Nice. Yeah, just a piece of wood.
Yeah, no, it was just a piece of wood. So, like, in some ways, it's weird to be like, it's kind of a disappointment. Because, like, where do you go from burning down a house?
Yeah.
It's like, you can't really. People who do that go to prison. They usually don't get to have a match with the guy whose house they burned down.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, in some ways, it feels like it underwhelmed from the, like, colossal, like, huge stakes story they told. Like, they couldn't meet the craziness of the story in the match because, like, at the end of the day, they're not trying to actually hurt each other.
Right, so, they're not going to actually murder somebody. But, yeah. But I think the ending, though, kind of brought it around because he was, it did push him to a place where, like, I don't think sane person would go kind of a thing.
He doesn't feel like a righteous person anymore.
Yeah. So, I also think though too, like, yeah, they went super far over the top and all that with the storytelling. But I think since Adam Page's return, the fact that his sole focus has been on getting back into the ring with Swerve one-on-one, like he's obsessed. He's a man obsessed. And I think I've been enjoying that piece of the storytelling because he's like a horse with blinders on. He has one goal and one goal only, and it'll be interesting to see where he goes now.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So, where does he focus now? So
Swerve, I think, is also going to be off filming something or doing something. So he's going to be off TV for a little while too. So
I mean, he deserves a little bit of a break too. Also, just wanted to give a big shout out to Prince Nana for being voted the number one manager.
That's crazy.
In the
PWI
rankings. I'm so happy for him. He deserved. I love him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I don't know. Overall, I did enjoy this pay-per-view though. I thought they had good match. Also too, so it's crazy to me that they had nine matches, something like that, in 4 hours. And WWE does 5 matches in 4 hours.
Yeah,
because they have a whole bunch of like the storytelling vignettes in between. So, and so when I think about it like that, it just makes me really realize that while storylines may be repetitive and things may come back, they really are two very different standalone shows and products. And I think that's why there's so much discourse around it.
Yeah.
But if everyone watched all of it, I think people would realize, okay, like, it's just not for me, and that's okay, too.
One of my favorite...
Just trying to bring people together.
Yeah. Now, one of my favorite things to talk about, AEW business stuff. This show ended up doing some, like, crazy last-minute sales. I think they ended up getting close to 9,000 or so, maybe a little more than 9,000.
For them. Just, I think the last time we spoke, they only had, like, 6,000 sold.
Yeah, they had, like, a big push at the end, and... It once again continues the trend of dissuading the idea that the people at large don't like the AEW product, because all of the storylines and stuff lead to pay-per-views. And if those things weren't good, people wouldn't buy tickets to the pay-per-views and they wouldn't buy the pay-per-views themselves. And those metrics continue to be like super strong. So again, it's just AEW is struggling because WWE isn't struggling. And like, that's all there is to it. When AEW started, WWE was like struggling by their standards. They were the ones doing buildings that were half empty. They were the ones whose product was being crapped on all the time. And I think when AEW did start at the perfect time to become a viable, popular second brand. But I think their larger goal was betting that they would be able to bring in a bunch of lapsed fans in droves. And that didn't happen. Like, that was the thing that I think they really bet hard on. Like, oh man, there's so many wrestling fans out there that haven't watched since like the Monday Night Wars and stuff, and we can bring them back, but they didn't.
No.
I mean, that's not to say there aren't, I'm talking statistically, of course there are some that did come back, but not in like large enough numbers to make any sort of difference. And once Vince got ousted and Triple H was put in charge and the product got better, a bunch of people who were AEW fans just went back to watching WWE because that was the thing. Like, they went to AEW because WWE sucked. But once WWE stopped sucking, they're like, oh, thank God, my WWE is all better now.
It's back.
Yeah. So yeah, they just went back to it. But this continues to do well. One thing that's not doing well is Grand Slam is not doing well. It's doing very poorly at the moment. The last update I saw from WrestleTix, this was 3 days ago, but it was after this last Dynamite, where they changed the main event of the show. They are still under 5,000 tickets distributed for Arthur Ashe, which is very
bad. And how many does it hold?
Well, the first one they did with a with a reduced stage where they opened up most of the stadium and sold it out almost immediately, they did almost 20,000.
Okay, wow.
So this is, like, much smaller. Like, they're going to be very lucky if they can even get half of that.
Right.
If they can even get 10. And I don't know if they're going to be able to, because it's, I think it's this Wednesday. Is it this Wednesday? No, it might be the Wednesday after next.
No, I think it's next Wednesday.
They've got a couple more weeks to try to sell tickets for it. But I know that they've changed the main event. They did this thing where Moxley confronted Darby Allin, who was supposed to be getting the shot, and convinced him to fight Mox for the shot at the title because he's like, Brian's not going to be healthy. He's not going to be able to wrestle. So you're not even going to get that match anyway. And I think you should give me the match. And I think maybe to your happiness, Jacqueline, I think the idea is that Moxley is going to end up getting the shot. Because I think they wanted to do Brian and Darby at some point for the title. But obviously this heel turn from Mox and the, like, obviously that's the big match right now. And maybe they're going to do that at Tacoma Dome in Seattle for WrestleDream.
Oh, no. Look.
So, I mean Moxley. Allen. I mean Moxley and Brian is what they're going to do at WrestleDream.
Gotcha. Sorry.
And in a thing that doesn't make any sense, because Nigel McGuinness heard that Bryan Danielson's going to be out and won't be defending the title, he still decides to go to Tony Khan so he can make a challenge to Brian for the show anyway, which doesn't make any sense. But Tony Khan,
he's an opportunist.
Yeah. So the idea is they're going to do Nigel McGuinness and Bryan Danielson in a non-title match only if Brian can get cleared.
Right.
Which is, but in your head, you're supposed to already realize that, of course, he's going to be cleared. And this is the match, and we should be excited to go see it. And I think he's doing this in the hopes that it is going to sell more tickets to the show. And, I mean, it'll end up making Darby look like a dummy for giving up his title shot to John Moxley. But, you know, Darby's a reckless guy. So maybe it'll play into the storyline. But
I just don't want Darby to win.
I don't think he's gonna. I think Mox is gonna win, and they're gonna go to Mox and Danielson for the title, probably at WrestleDream, is my guess.
Okay. I'll allow it.
So yeah, there's that. And now I'm trying to think, there are other matches for Arthur Ashe that are also good. The Mox and Darby match. And then there's one other match that's also there, but I don't remember what it is now off the top of my head.
Neither do I.
They might be doing Mariah May and Mina Shirakawa there. I know she called out Mina. So that could possibly be a thing. But yep, other than that, it's sort of up in the air.
Oh, it's the Young Bucks with versus Kyle Fletcher and Will Ospreay.
For the tag titles.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Because Ospreay and Fletcher won a tag casino gauntlet thing.
Gauntlet. I like the gauntlets, though. They are fun.
They are super fun. Yeah. I did not see this tag one, but I hope it was fun.
It was. It was ridiculous.
Okay, so one other thing. Jacqueline, if you know anything about WWE right now.
Yes, I know a few things.
Tell me, because I don't know anything right now. I haven't watched in a little bit.
We watched a good part of SmackDown this past Friday, which made its return to USA. They have new graphics. I dig them. Some may not.
Oh, yeah. The SmackZone.
Yes. Yes. So I like how it does it, like with the Disney D. I don't know.
Anyway, I like how it looks. I like how it looks, but the concept is weird to me because the D kind of looks like a D for like the down. But if you take that same idea that only the top half is the S, it doesn't look enough like an S. So, but if you combine them, they both look like an S, but then it looks like SmackZone. So I may just call it that from now on. What are we gonna do?
So we watched that. Okay. Roman Reigns made multiple appearances this past Friday. Paul Heyman is nowhere to be seen. So the opening match, I don't know if you saw the opening match on SmackDown, though. It was
Cody and Solo in a cage.
Cody, of course, won. But after the match, of course, the new bloodline, which I'm going to call them, comes out. It's like Saved by the Bell, the new class, come out to attack Cody.
Okay.
And these guys, and the blood, so Tama Tonga, Tonga Loa, and Jacob Fatu, rather than going through the door of the steel cage, decide to climb it to get into the ring. And these three, I have never seen anyone climb fences that fast. I feel like people need to study how they get into the ring and do that.
I'm just shocked Tangaloa made it okay without any incident.
He did.
Jacob Fatu, sure. Tama Tonga, sure. Tangaloa, I'm stunned the guy can walk and
he's agile.
He okay?
Yeah, so that happened, and then they announced at the next pay-per-view, which is going to be
Bad Blood. Okay.
That it's going to be Solo and Jacob versus Roman and Cody.
Okay.
In a match. So, should be interesting. Seems like they're gearing up for Survivor Series War Games.
Yep.
They were showing people in the crowd, like who was in the crowd, like WWE.
Hall of Famers. I saw some of the discourse on this on the internet. Most people were really cool with it. They weren't cool with Vicky Guerrero being there.
No, people are not cool with Vicky Guerrero, but William Regal was there. Yep. And why they showed like Damian Priest, who's a current WWE star, is beyond me. But like that is your choice.
He's just so excited, Jacqueline, for this new TV deal between WWE and USA Network. Like, he's like, hey, welcome to USA. We're not going to be sticking around here, but like, you know, keep our seat
friends.
Warm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they did that. And then who's the guy? Teddy something. Yes. I don't know much about him, but he seems beloved. And anytime they show him on TV, I get a lot of memes in my timeline that says that we're going one-on-one with The Undertaker. So
yeah, make it a tag match play. He used to be the SmackDown general manager. Yeah.
So I enjoy it. There was one other thing. The other thing. I don't know if you've watched any Raw recently, but for each show, they have their new announced teams. Joe Tessitore. Or Tessitore, I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Yeah.
Made his debut as an announcer. He's not fluent in wrestling terms, but he's a very good announcer.
Okay.
I enjoy him. He's very impassioned.
Okay.
So I'm excited for him. Him and Wade Barrett together, I think, are a very good pairing. And I think I don't watch all of Raw. It's 3 hours. That's too long for me. But what I do see, I've liked so far. So
you must be amped because they're going to 2 hours for the rest of the year.
I am so excited.
Until they hit Netflix, and then I'm sure they'll be back to three. But
like that is like, honestly, it should be less than that because you have no commercials on Netflix, right? So
they will actually have commercials on Netflix.
Yeah. Well, damn it. I was trying.
There are a lot of people who are upset about that.
But there's that. I also, in a new segment, I'm going to call Wrestlers in the Wild, saw a few WWE stars in the wild last weekend. And I recognize them because I saw Austin Theory in person, and that man has the eyebrows of an early 2000s preteen. They are so perfectly plucked and shaped, and geez, I was like, oh my gosh, he spends too much time at a salon, I am sure. But also, his arms are huge in person. I just wanted to point that out. If you have not seen him, his muscles seem legit. So Austin Theory, that was also out with his A Town Down Under partner, Grayson Waller, who did a better job of trying to blend in with us normal folks. But I mean, they stand out. Mm-hmm. And then former countryman, Indy Hartwell as well. It was super exciting just to see them out and about on a Saturday in a theme park, which was super cool. And started talking to my husband about it a little bit. And he's like, you know, they said that they're doing less house shows. Maybe we're going to see more wrestlers out in the wild. And I was like, that would be cool. So I'm keeping my eyes peeled.
They're supposedly they're supposedly reducing them even more. Yeah. So next year. So that doesn't surprise me. I think for Bad Blood also, the word is they're going to do Punk and Drew and Hell in a Cell, I think. And they're gonna. Did you see the friendship bracelet news?
That they started selling it and didn't give the actual creator of the bracelet any credit or heads up about it? Absolutely. No.
And then they took it down. Well, yes, but I mean, then they took it down and then replaced it with another one that just says CM Punk. And they're charging just an outrageous price for these.
Of course they are.
I think they're charging $10. Which is unbelievable. So
you can make that for less.
Oh, way, 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 way less. Like, I went
and make extras.
one of the few things ChatGPT is good for is mathing things. And I just went there and I'm like, okay, what are the prices for the materials to make friendship bracelets? And I'm like, what if you wanted to, so it would tell me, and like, what if you want to like mass produce like 10,000 of those with those prices?
Oh yeah.
Like what would be a fair asking price to make money back on it? And it estimated a price of between $3 and $5 a bracelet.
Yes.
They're charging double.
Yep.
I mean, there's a reason. I mean, maybe Taylor Swift sells friendship bracelets at her shows, but I doubt it. Like, most of the people who have them make them because they're insanely easy to make. You can make a ton of them for like, you can spend like $25 on materials and make like a ton of them.
Yes. So what we're saying is go make your own.
Yeah. Don't buy those. Like that's redonkulous.
Yes.
There is some WWE news when it comes to one of the NXT shows. They're doing like 2 weeks. They're 2 weeks in a row for CW. They're going to be doing these outside of the PC shows. They're doing one in Chicago, which is selling kind of well. And then they're going to do one in St. Louis, which is not selling kind of well. And they've moved it to a smaller venue. The Chicago one has Punk on it. And I think they're doing Julia and Roxanne on that show.
And, that'll be an amazing show.
And I think they're doing Ego and Trick, which, you know, whatever. And Punk's going to do something on it. And the St. Louis one has Orton on it. And I think the idea, by the way, the St. Louis one is going head to head with AEW, which I think has to be on a Tuesday for that week.
Okay.
So this is the thing that happened last time. And WWE brought like, I'm sure you remember, everybody, like John Cena was there for no reason. And Undertaker was there for no reason. And then they beat AEW and then everybody celebrated.
Look what we did.
Yeah. So I think that's happening again. But I guess the idea here is that they want to try to hit like 1 million viewers for CW, which from what I hear is going to be a very tall task. The CW is so weird to me because it's an over-the-air channel like Fox or CBS or NBC, but nobody watches it like those channels. They get like cable TV viewership numbers, which is crazy to me. Maybe people just forget it exists or there's never anything on it that people like, but...
And I feel like it's forever been like a young adult channel.
Yeah. There's a not zero possibility that it could do lower numbers than it did on USA. Yeah,
absolutely.
I feel like it'll probably do about the same, but there's a non-zero chance that they might even see some drop off, but we'll see. I would suspect the first week or two should be good, but we'll find out. Oh, and one more thing before we take off. There is some AEW TV deal news. And at the All Out Scrum, which I don't even know if you can call it that. It lasted like 15 minutes. Because like Tony
Khan. Thank goodness. That's what it should be
for. Tony Khan had to go to like a Jags thing. And he was like, hey, everybody, like, there's no wrestlers tonight. It's just going to be me. And I can only do like a few things. So people obviously asked about the TV deal. There's been tons of news about it. He said that he recognized that there's been tons of reporting. And he says that most of the reporting from reputable sources is very accurate. Which says a lot of things. Somebody asked him what the percentage was of a deal being announced within the next month, and he said 90%. So they're very close to a deal.
That's good.
There are a couple of things that are surprising in this because one thing that people noted, and Tony Khan mentioned it because somebody asked him about it, but he also mentioned it and said the name a bunch of times. Somebody noted that slightly before All Out, or maybe, no, it was slightly before All Out. It was maybe like a week before. Somebody noticed that AEW had filed a trademark for AEW Shockwave, which people thought might be a pay-per-view or something. And somebody mentioned this to him, and he mentioned Shockwave like a bunch of times. Like, we're going to send a shockwave, stuff like that. And then talk started coming out that part of AEW's new television agreement is not going to be exclusive to Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And then people
I heard about this.
And then people started saying that they've been hearing that it's possible they may have a deal with Fox. And people were thinking like, oh, surely like FS1 or FX or something like that. And maybe still that's where it is. But then people started talking about why they didn't re-sign SmackDown. And they didn't re-sign SmackDown largely because they paid them a certain amount. And it's not that SmackDown didn't do good in the ratings. And it's not that SmackDown didn't draw advertisers. But it doesn't draw the kind of like S-tier sponsors. Like, people seem to think that WWE does. No. The NFL gets top-tier sponsors. They get, they get, like, Nike and, like, all the beer brands and all the car brands and stuff like that. Like, WWE gets, like, Dude Wipes and, you know...
Prime Water.
Snickers, things like that. They're not bad sponsors, but they're not, like, the top tier. Anyway... The kind of ad money that Fox was getting was basically less than what they were paying WWE for. Basically, they're paying WWE too much and getting too little in return. However,
so they could pay less for AEW and get more in return.
However, the talk is that those sponsors for Fox still want to do wrestling content, and they can get AEW a lot cheaper than they could get SmackDown. Yep. It's possible they could end up on Fox proper for a show.
That would be crazy.
It would be crazy. I don't know what this would mean. Like, they can't have four shows. They can't have three shows right now. And they're doing three shows. And, like, Rampage has suffered significantly. And Collision is starting to suffer a little bit right now.
Yes.
Like, you can't. I don't know what they're going to do. But that's part of the talk. And if it's, you know, it would be big money for them. It would be huge if they did it, which is obviously why they would do it. And whether you or I like it, and I think for both of us, the answer is, at least in this particular thing, like, I think the answer is actually know because it's too many shows, but the name of the game for the wrestling business these days isn't selling tickets or selling pay-per-views. It's getting networks to pay you to make content.
Right.
And like, that's the name of the game. So if Fox is like, hey, make a fourth show, they'll be like, right away, give us that big check, back up that truck or whatever.
Honestly, I hope they just phase out Rampage.
Same. Yeah. Same.
So.
Or move it, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or rename it, like get rid of Rampage and Shockwave is the new thing.
That's what I think it's going to be.
Part of the deal, also, it has been discussed, is pay-per-views on Max. But again, we don't know the specifics of that. So we don't know if it's pay-per-views as part of your Max subscription or pay-per-views are available in addition to your Max subscription.
Well, so hopefully we find that out soon.
Yeah, I know there are people that are dying for the pay-per-view as part of the Max subscription. It does sound, it almost sounds like 100% at this point that back catalog stuff will be available because it already is in some countries. Like somebody noted in France on Max, the whole AEW catalog is up. You can watch all of their shows, all of their pay-per-views, all the way up to All In this year are all on Max, like in France. So, and I think in another country as well, like the back catalog is already available. So I think it's only a matter of time before it's, you know, made available to the US. So I think that's a given. Like the shows are just going to be available there for people to go back and watch, which could be fun for us. Like if things are like really slow, we could decide to go back and watch like an AEW pay-per-view from before you became a fan or before we started watching it and talking about it.
Maybe.
There's a lot of good stuff there. There's a lot of, if we get bored.
Yeah. If we, oh, please.
If there's like
four shows, who knows?
If nothing happens, I know there's so much content. I feel like that's not likely to happen, but it is there if people want to go back and watch it. So yeah, that's all of the news that's fit to be ranted about on a podcast on the internet. I think, will Bad Blood happen before the next time we podcast? I don't even remember when Bad Blood is.
I don't know.
It might be. It might not be. That's how professional we are, everybody.
Yep.
See, what it is that it's getting late and we're both, we're not spring chickens anymore. We're just tired and we're going to call it a night, but not before we do the plug stuff at the end. I may even leave that part in where I make fun of myself. why? Because I'm too lazy to edit.
Why not?
Yeah. head on over to cinemageekly.com where you can check out the archives of the show. And this is a listener-supported podcast, of course. And there are a couple ways you can help out there if you like. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/cinemageekly. We have the merch store, geeklymerch.com. Links are in the show notes for this episode. And of course, you can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, Pocket Casts, anywhere that you can find a good podcast. Just search for The Heat, hit subscribe, and that way you can join us in 2 weeks where we will more than likely talk about the fallout from WWE's Bad Blood.